If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, March 29th, 2024. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing, Addy O'Yea Jr. Joining me is host of PS I Love You, XOXO, WWE Superstar, Greg Miller.
Hello, Blessing. How are you?
I'm doing good, Greg. How are you?
I'm excellent. I do have a problem with you.
So, wait, with me?
Yeah. I want you to do a great introduction to me whenever you do the show. I appreciate that quite a bit. When you're out and about with your friends, you're at your GDC parties, you're hobnobbing with magicians.
Yep.
How do you describe our relationship? If you were to introduce Greg, would it be my blank?
I'll say my boss.
My boss.
Yeah, my boss, Greg Miller. One of my coworkers.
Okay.
No, I usually say, I'll say boss or
that's
co-host.
Fair. That's fair.
Depending on the, it honestly does depend on the context.
Not friend, huh?
Like if I'm talking about, friend. I just like the stare down.
The problem.
How would
I
you
have,
introduce me?
Blessing? My man.
My main dude.
No.
My guy.
Right before we did the show, I was like, we're late, but I'm like, let's go to set. And I started going, like, you know what? I didn't put enough product in my hair today. I should go check on that. And I went in there and found out that I just led a fucking meeting as if I was in Hurricane Katrina. My hair was all cattywampus and all over the place.
I thought that was a purposeful thing.
And not one person in that meeting was like, Greg, you look like a fucking idiot. You look like you got kicked by a mule and started playing PC games. Honestly, nobody said that.
Honestly, I thought it was a creative choice.
I also thought it was a creative choice.
Do you think I'm that creative? That's the big question.
Everybody. No, but your wife is.
There you go.
Fair enough. I remember when I had those ripped jeans that just had ripped jeans out of nowhere. I was like, where the hell did these come from?
I also think that you treat the studio like a second home. And so when you come in here, it's like, you know.
Is that good or bad?
Oh, it's a good thing.
Okay.
Yeah, not like a weird way, but more so in the way of like, you know, if you come here and you look a bit disheveled,
sure,
it's fine.
It's when you come through that door. When you come through that door, that's when the work. That's
when
this happens.
If you came out here and your hair is all over the place,
that's when I have a reputation to uphold.
Exactly.
As the most limber person at Kinda Funny.
Like if you sat down in front of the camera and you look, oh my God, what's happening? Jesus fucking Christ, he's doing. That was pretty limber. I'm not gonna lie. I love that we had monitor issues just yesterday, and you're putting it to the test. But yeah, no, if you sat down here and you're disheveled, it's a good chance I'd say something.
I appreciate
not
that.
Not 100%, but there's a good chance I would say
okay,
something.
Fair enough. I appreciate that. Thank
would you.
Would
you do the same for me?
Of course.
What if
but
I was
the problem
just out
is
the
you always
of
look good.
Thank you.
It's like the first time I met Brandon Jones in person.
Is he a good looking man?
Or Brandon Jones?
I don't know if I've
met former Easy Allies?
No, I guess I have. I met
he
him
came
like
through
once
here, but
person,
he might
yeah.
not have been here.
Oh, I guess he is a good
but he had a blueberry
man.
On his tooth. And it was one of those things where I was like, what do I do? First time meeting this man. But we were both also hanging out with Kojima.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I got to help him.
Mm.
I did it. Told him.
There
sucked the blueberry off his tooth for him.
So,
Jesus.
Some of that story is true. Some of it's false. Where do you think it is?
So what are the percent? I want the percentage breakdown of the ways you introduce me to people that either know me or
Blessing.
Don't know me.
Just like,
I'd
say I work with him.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say my coworker.
You don't say you're a subordinate?
No.
No?
We don't have, I mean, we do, but we don't. Right? Like, kind of funny, doesn't it? We do, but we don't.
Yeah.
We have that relationship, but it's not really our relationship.
I guess
I'm projecting that, so I don't know. You have to tell me what it is.
No, I guess that's the thing is, like, if I'm talking to somebody, if I'm meeting somebody new who doesn't even know what I do, and I'm describing, like, oh, yeah, like, my
boss.
Yeah,
I got
boss
this fucking asshole boss.
Yeah,
rolls
like, if I'm
over
like,
the table.
Because that's the thing is, I think you come up a lot in my personal life, just for the fact of if I'm trying to explain to somebody what Kinda Funny is and
sure.
what we do, right? Like,
yeah.
It's very easy to go from, okay, there's this guy that I work with, right, who's also my boss, and he, like, works for WWE and hosts stuff.
Yeah,
right? Like,
yeah,
you're
yeah.
an easy point of reference.
Sure, okay.
And so usually if it's somebody that doesn't know what we do, I would say boss. If it is somebody that's a bit more in the circles that, like, or at least somebody who understands content creation, I would say co-host.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
Like, somebody who I'm on content with, co-worker, friend, like,
I'll go
down that route. But if it's somebody I don't know, I'd be like, oh, that's my boss.
I respect that.
There you go.
I got
you.
An email from game developer right as we went live. The subject line, it's time to fight back.
Oh, God.
Jesus Christ. Are we going to this a call to arms? You know what I mean? I don't even know.
I've been waiting for it.
I'm fucking ready. Let's go, Bless.
Let's fucking go. Let's talk about some video game news, because today's stories include Suicide Squad's big update, big CD Projekt Red updates, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday, we run you through the nerdy news you need to know about live on YouTube, Twitch, and on podcast services around the globe. If you love what we do, support us with the Kinda Funny membership on Patreon or YouTube to get all of our shows ad-free, watch us record them live, and get a daily exclusive show. For a chance to be a part of the show, submit your thoughts and opinions as YouTube Super Chats as we go. Housekeeping for you, a new episode of Game Showdown airs right after this, featuring Alana Pierce, Ben Starr, and Abubakar Saleem. That's happening over on YouTube.com/KindaFunnyGames and Twitch.tv/KindaFunnyGames. And then we also got a new episode of PS I Love You XOXO that is up right now, where Greg and Joey give their opinions of Open Roads. I give my Stellar Blade impressions, and the crew talks more about Helldivers 2. You can check that out over on YouTube.com/KindaFunnyGames.
You got to get into Helldivers 2, Buzz. It's never too late.
I think it is too late.
No, impossible.
I feel like the hype is only going to die down from here.
No, impossible. I just got Jack started on. I got Jack's in now. Jack's all in. The 10-year-old boy out there.
Jack's a 10-year-old boy with all the free time in the world.
Sure.
You know? I got things I'm doing. I got to play Tekken.
Run me through some of the things. Bring out your daily planner. Let me see your schedule.
It starts off, I play Tekken, and then I switch over to Bellatro. And then I switch over to Hades. All right? I'm a busy man. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Carl Jacobs, Kieran Hovasapien, and Delaney Twining. Today brought to you by Shady Rays, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is, and forever will be, the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories today.
A baker's dozen.
Can I immediately interrupt you before you even go or whatever? I was happy the other day. I forget what it was. I needed to tag Chris Roper. Of course, my first co-boss. Dunham was my first boss, but then Roper took
over. So you talk about, you say he's your boss.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You missed the point. It was just about, we have a relationship. You should have told me about my hair. It wasn't okay. Don't try to flip this whole fucking thing on me. But I needed to tag him in something, so I couldn't remember his Twitter profile, and I opened it up. And I like that his Chris_Roper on Twitter says, currently does stuff for PlayStation, period. Namesake of various show and podcast segments, period. And that warms my heart that he still recognizes the Roper Reports out there doing the business.
Yeah. Shout out Chris Roper. Story number one. Suicide Squad killed the Justice League. The league's Joker season is unbelievably bad. This is according to Paul Tassi at Forbes. While I was not exactly expecting Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League's new Joker season to save the already failed game, I was not expecting it to be one of the worst live season launches I have ever seen. I'm going to pause there and say, these are all the words of Paul Tassi, right? This is more of an opinion piece than a news story, but it also kind of doubles as a news story because, like, we got to know what's going on in this.
Here's what we'll say. I'll say. You don't have to say it. I'm not going to put words in your mouth. Paul Tassi is the homie, and Paul Tassi is the live service homie. This is the guy who's in the trenches for Destiny, was in the trenches for Avengers. If there's a live service game, he is playing it. He is talking about it. He knows this beat better than anybody, I think, working right now. So if he's saying it's that disastrous, it's right.
He continues, it's a void of content, a mountain of grinding, and a complete lack of a story that was promised to continue after the abrupt ending of the campaign. What went wrong here? Quite literally, almost everything. After the first day, in which I have finished essentially everything, here's what happened. And he bullet points it. And he bullet points it in, like, large paragraphs, which means this man had something to say.
I'm not being, you know, facetious or doing character or whatever. Like, Paul Tassi knows live service games so well. And so yesterday, when I saw him do the initial tweet of, like, am I missing something? I was like, oh, my God. And I would check in every so often to see if he was going to do as you're tweeting, it's all happening live. If he was going to do that. I figured it out. Here's the thing. That this is the article. Yeah, this man's got to take some people to task.
So he starts off, you're not given Joker when you log in, unlike when Marvel's Avengers dropped a new character. Instead, you're told to grind to season rank 35 to fight Brainiac to then unlock him. This is not Battle Pass rank or Mastery rank, but a separate third rank that'll force you to grind somewhere between 10 to 20 missions, depending on the mission, to reach that level. This is old content with your old characters, but your difficulty is capped on things like incursions, making them impossibly easy with your already powerful builds. And then he goes on to his next bullet point. There are no new mission types at launch here. Zero. There was supposed to be something called a stronghold, but it may not launch until halfway through the season, and it's not here now. Instead, the new incursions are either straight up killing enemies, grunts in one, brutes in one, infused enemies in one, and then the anti-aircraft gun mini mission for the first game. Third bullet point. The Brainiac boss fight is a barely modified version of the Green Lantern fight.
Oh, shocking. Who would have called it? Me.
Think he's going to be...
Me, baby.
Think he's going to at least summon new alien constructs with the ring? Wrong. The same helicopters, mines, guns, everything. It's identical to when the first Brainiac copied the Flash boss fight at the end of the campaign. Bullet point number four. As for Joker story content, there are exactly two things. A motion comic at the season opening showing him being trapped by Brainiac. Then when you rescue him, there is a brief cutscene with him being taken to Argus and recruited. He doesn't even speak to Harley, and she just tells Shark she's not into comedians anymore. There's no story mission related to Joker at all. There are no story missions in the season whatsoever, as I am not counting that bad Brainiac fight. And the next couple bullet points I shortened because I didn't want to read this forever, but bullet point number five.
Yeah, how badly can we beat this dead horse?
Yeah. Once you have Joker, it's ... back to grinding the same stuff again. Nothing new appears. And then the next bullet point, Joker himself is ... fine. As I've said before, the problem with Suicide Squad is that all these characters are close to identical, minus their traversal and ultimate. This is ridiculous. This game is beyond dead if this is how it's going to handle its seasons. The live aspect could have explained what was missing from the campaign if they'd held back stuff to add later. This is not what happened. There is nothing. It's unbelievable. Greg?
You're unbelievable. Yeah.
You're somebody who, I guess, would be in the market for Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League somewhat. I know you weren't as jazzed for like the Suicide Squad aspect of it.
Sure.
But, you know, you liked Avengers. You like a live service thing. This is in DC world. You gave it a fair shot. When you read this, I guess what goes through your mind about this game?
Man, when I read this, I can't believe how badly this has been fumbled and how they learned nothing from Avengers, even making the wrong decisions from Avengers, right? Where it was like, love or hate Avengers, right? At least when you wanted to go play the new Hawkeye, you got the new Hawkeye right away. When you wanted to be Spider-Man, he was there right away on PlayStation. Mm. You know what I mean? The new character was immediately available that you could go through and have fun with and have that part, let alone the motion comic and the chirping from the Avengers in there, making it seem like, oh, this is an actual addition to the team. This is cool. They're, you know, blah, blah, blah. They're building something that, of course, they never made it to because they fucked up real bad and their game was not great. To see Rocksteady, to see WB just trip on the same sticks in the path to and do it worse apparently, and also get to, like, if you remember when I was talking about how much I did not like Suicide Squad at review, right? I was saying maybe it'll be interesting checking in 6 months, a year, because if these new seasons add new missions, maybe it won't be so blatantly obvious you're doing the same thing over and over and over and over again. And here you are, season one, no new missions, right? It's even more glaringly obvious that there's just the most shallow pool ever of what is going on. And that's heartbreaking. You know what, again, like, it brings me, I did the, you know, my goofy laugh at the beginning, right? Mainly because people were like, you don't get it, Greg. You know what the Suicide Squad
thing. I did see a lot of that on the internet.
Well, there was a lot of,
getting mad at
this guy liked Avengers and he doesn't like this game. And I'm like, yes, I like the most mid superhero game of all time. And I can't enjoy this game. That's a problem, right? It's just more the fact that, like, here we are, and Suicide Squad will continue to be, I feel, until it's dead, like one of my most fascinating stories. I will, whenever Paul puts something up about an update, whenever Rocksteady says something or doesn't say something, I'm going to want to know about it immediately. Because, like, how long can this go on? This was the big, yeah, the game didn't do this, but it's got some people who like it, and this is going on. Maybe season one drops and can get people back and can do this different thing, right? The 24-hour peak as of right now is 3,000 players on Steam. Not great.
Yeah.
Better than what it was before, but I mean...
But like the first day of a new season.
Yeah, right? For the first day of a... You know, the all-time peak of this was 13,500, right? So you're just talking about like a game that just did not do it and is not doing it now. And again, in a world of mass layoffs, in a world of a video game industry being more cutthroat than ever, you got to, in a world of fucking Warner Brothers, the people who are like, yeah, that Coyote movie looks pretty good, fucking throw it away for a tax break, throw away Batgirl for a tax break, close Rooster Teeth, do this, we're trying to make money and save money and do this thing, they cannot be looking at this and be like, well, we promised however many seasons, like, again, remember the Suicide Squad games end of story is the launch of, spoilers, you need to go fight 12 different Brainiacs that are going to be out in these seasons. So this is Brainiac 2 or 3, I don't know, whatever. It's like, what? Like, you're not getting the rest of those fucking brainiacs. There is no way Warner Brothers wants to throw good money after bad of like, well, we made a promise. And then you look at the domino effect of like, what does that mean for Rocksteady? Mm-hmm. What does it mean for a studio that is clearly, we go back to Naughty Dog, right? And when they canceled their project, clearly staffed up for a live service game that they were going to be a part of and they needed to support it for years. If that's gone in the next 6 months, is Rocksteady still around? Is it just a mass layoff at Rocksteady? Where is Rocksteady right now in
pre-production of their next thing? Games, right? We're coming off of Gotham Knights not doing so well a couple years ago, right? This not doing so well. I know the Hogwarts Legacy game has been the biggest success so far for WB Games in the last few years, right? But I think you need way more than Hogwarts Legacy, especially when we talk about the news story from a couple weeks ago where they talk about, oh yeah, we saw the success with Hogwarts Legacy. We want to double down on the service, right? Like, they don't really... I don't think they understand what they want over there, I don't think they understand exactly the realities of what's going on with games as a service.
I hearken back to, I remember when there was all the rumors that they were trying to sell the games division. I think that's what they want to do and wanted to do and probably want to do now. And they are just diluting their own value by putting out disappointment after disappointment, Hogwarts notwithstanding, right? But what does this mean for Wonder Woman? Like, what's going on with this Wonder Woman single player game? Mm-hmm. Like, is that actually good? Is WB not getting in the way of it? Remember when they put up the job posting at Monolith that was like, we need somebody with games as a service experience. Then the next day after it all got cycled, they had to put out a statement being like, it is a single player game. There are no microtransactions or live service, battle pass kind of thing, whatever. Yeah. Like, WB wants to sell this games division. And if I was a betting man, the problem is they want to sell the games division and obviously none of the IP.
Oh yeah.
Do I want to buy Rocksteady if they can't make Batman games? Like, I mean, I would.
I think one of the things they talked about, and this is a while ago, so you had to refresh my memory, but like, I think they talked about, oh yeah, we'll sell you the studio, but you can still license out the IP from us. But yeah, like, you would imagine it would keep a lot of that money.
I forget if that's a rumor, if that's actually a report, but I've heard that before, sure. Or maybe it was just us intelligently guessing what's probably going on. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine that's what they're trying to do. And everybody's like, no, you suck at this. And you also don't fucking get it. Yeah. Like, if Warner Brothers came in right now, like, we want to buy Kind of Funny, I'd be like, get the fuck out of here. You know what I mean? Well, I'll be out of business in a year. You'll just get, like, they're
And I think
soulless.
You also, like, you look at NetherRealm, right? NetherRealm is a very talented studio.
Ed Boon would be safe out there, all right?
You know, NetherRealm is a studio that I don't want anything bad to happen, right? Like, I wanted them to be in business forever. But if you're looking to sell NetherRealm, but you're not looking to sell Mortal Kombat or, like, a DC property with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Then what are they going to do, right? Like, are they going to create a new Mortal Kombat?
You know how it gets into such a weird thing of, like, if you were doing all that and I was Marvel Games, I saw it go through the chat, it's already gone, but Rocksteady should make a Daredevil game, right? Like,
Yeah.
But again, that's not even what Marvel Games does, because they pivoted a while back to being what I think is a way smarter brand of, like, cool, it costs a lot of money to run studios and keep studios employed when they're not making stuff. So we will partner with studios. We will let them use our IP. We will do these projects together, but we won't own them. We won't have an internal Marvel Games studio. And obviously, knock on wood, that's what it was back then. I'm sure that could change at any time, blah, blah, blah. But I don't see it being, oh, you're looking to offload Rocksteady. Yes, we'd love to buy them and have them make this and spin it up. And 7 years from now, you get a Daredevil game from the studio we're just pouring money into.
Yeah. I do want to point out a chat. Callum says, that's a nice mug, Greg.
Thank you.
And that is a nice mug. Is that one that just, like, is that in the drawers here? Or do you?
Yeah, it's in the drawers here. It's a very nice piece of pottery. Of course, my wife does pottery now. This is not one of hers. She does pottery. So I have more of an appreciation for pottery. I do believe this came in one of the press packs for some game. It's got a little hammer on it that's also a pencil. So and it's got a dice in the middle. It's five. I'll continue to describe this logo. Maybe it's like a studio that launched. I would turn it and bear it with digital zoom. I don't know if it actually show. But imagine a hammer. The centerpiece is a dice that has five on it. Then there's a pencil below it.
A dice that has five on it.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's like a die you'd roll in D&D.
Yeah, this is a riddle. Is this like a Baldur's Gate thing?
No, with a hammer?
They might have hammers in the game.
They didn't have hammers back then. The only thing they were hammering was each other. They have sex in that game.
You do have sex in that game. No, you're right.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Speaking of sex, my wife's in the chat. Hi, Jen.
One thing I wanted to mention regarding this as well is that they delayed this game a year.
Cameron Kennedy, turns out it's a hate symbol.
They delayed this game for about almost a full year, right? And in that delay, we've had a lot of speculation on, all right, what are they doing, right? Like, obviously, you're not going to recreate the game in a year. This is coming after we saw the PlayStation State of Play that was doing, like, the gameplay breakdown of what Suicide Squad is and all that stuff. my speculation, I think a lot of speculation was that, oh, they must be working on just like post-launch content, you know, making sure that this thing is going to be able to come out.
How can they keep fucking this up? This is what I'm talking about. You saw Avengers. Like, and again, Avengers has so many different problems, but I thought it was a fun game to play, and so did a lot of my friends. What really, 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 really is what broke Avengers back was completely fucking up post-launch.
Yep.
People liked the game enough single player at launch. You know what I mean? It had some eights, it had sevens. It was fine. It was in the middle there. And there was the promise of, well, Spider-Man could be cool. Hawkeyes don't sound cool, but I'm sure we'll get to cool people. But they fucked it up saying that they have a hero a month, and then, you know, like, then you get to Suicide Squad and they couldn't fathom that they needed to have this out there.
And I thought that was the one thing.
No one playtesting. You look at the fucking trailer Barrett ran. Mm-hmm. No one playtesting was like, we don't need another gun. The Two-Face gun that looks like Two-Face, it's just another gun.
That's really exciting, Greg.
Who gives a shit about it?
Which it makes me wonder, like,
gun
what went
skins.
Wrong.
I love that for my DC games.
Like, I would love the just documentary, like the breakdown of, hey, how did we get here with Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League? You know, a game that was
You'll
in development
it.
For a very long time. A game that, again, delayed itself for almost a year because of fan feedback and because they're like, hey, we're going to continue working on this thing. And again, like, if they weren't working on this post-launch content, maybe they were working on the post-launch content, and this is just the result of it. But if that's the case, like, there's more story that needs to be told, because how in the world do we get here, right? For, I guess, a genre or for a type of game that I think thrives off of, hey, you have to hit with the updates, right? Those seasons have to hit. That content has to hit. I feel like we've seen so few examples, at least in the AAA level, right? When I'm talking about like a Destiny, right? I'm talking about games like that where it is, oh, we put out a season update and people are happy. And even with Destiny has its misses.
Of course.
You know, Destiny only hits like a certain percentage of the time. I wonder if we're ever going to see this slow down in terms of people making this kind of games as a service and like realizing that, oh, this is way more difficult than we're foreseeing, right? Like, if we're not Fortnite, if we're not Destiny, if we're not Call of Duty, then why are we trying to do it at this level? Because making content is difficult. Like, that's what Naughty Dog saw.
Yeah.
You know,
this will fundamentally change our studio. We won't be able to make our single player
studio
games.
You know, the feedback that was like in the reports or rumors from Bungie to Naughty Dog was that, hey, like, the content here, like the post-launch content, is going to have to hit harder. And even for Naughty Dog, you look at that and you're like, oh, okay, well, to do that, we're going to have to fundamentally change our studio. Let's not do that. You know, like, I wonder if we see this stop. I wonder if we continue to see more games like Suicide Squad in the coming years.
I think it's got to stop, right? I think you have to look at this and I don't know. Nobody does, obviously. We can all talk, right? But I do venture and wonder if you can make a AAA live service game and have it be a success from the start. And then also, because what I would, you talk about Destiny. Mm-hmm. When Destiny 1 launched, people jumped in. They liked it, but it was, oh, it's vanilla. Oh, this thing. And then they added it and built, and then you get to Destiny 2. And again, you talk about a game launching a long time ago when there was a different cadence to games, when I think you could give something time to grow and change and evolve, right? Because you can jump to now, and it's like Rumbleverse launches, and we all think it's great, and we have a good time with it, right? But it closes up shop pretty quick because you just can't do that. And it's a little bit apples and oranges. Even I would throw out The Division 2, which so many people, including myself, say launched flawlessly and was great and had all this content, yada, yada. It was Division 2, right? They learned their lessons with Division 1. They made a community that stuck with them through all the bumps in the road. They get to Division 2 and go. I think you can then look at something, and I know that we give this game too many flowers probably, but again, Helldivers 2, where not AAA, far fewer expectations. You got nerds like me talking about it from 9 years ago that they can't wait to play it. And then you have it drop, and I really do feel, somebody wrote in, again, PS I Love You Today is me and Joey talking about how much we love Helldivers and how much we're still playing it, and a bunch of community feedback about it. Someone in there wrote in and was like, for me, this is the first real live service game. Like, it feels live. Something is changing in it every day. There's the narrative of what's going on social media, let alone that. And like, you know, you look at, right now there's 2,002 players playing Suicide Squad, right? Right now on PC. Mm-hmm. Right now on Steam, there are 203,000 people playing Helldivers 2, right? Mm-hmm. And like, when I went to check the poll article about Suicide Squad, I found the one about, I put into Wii News, but I'll read it here, right? Paul writes, Helldivers 2 players are about to quite literally erase automatons from the map. The point of last major order was to capture the comms array to see what the automatons are up to. And since we did that, we learned that the signal was being broadcast outside the current galactic map. That means one of two things. Either A, there is an automaton or cyborg force we don't know about lurking on the outside of known space, or B, perhaps the automatons are summoning the enemy we know is probably beyond our current map, the Illuminate, the aliens that were the original... That's fucking based on a little thing up here that's the major order, clear this out, we're down to one planet that it looks like we're going to take over. We're talking about the fact that when we do that planet, had these guys been sending a signal out to get help from a new fact? Like, and this wasn't the Helldiver stuff. What I'm talking about right now was not in a fucking flashy trailer. It was not in a, hey, we're doing a live stream where the devs are going to say a bunch of stuff. It's happening organically in the game. Mm. And even if you're not turning on, I was playing the game last night with Jack, right? I saw the major order. I didn't go and investigate what the fuck they're talking about. You know, you get then have people reporting on it as if it's the actual news of what's happening. Like,
there's a
Helldivers is a live game. There are things happening there. And again, it's live in a way Suicide Squad couldn't be, right? With like AAA presentation, character models, yada, yada, yada. Helldivers and Arrowhead made a sandbox, a toy box, and they're taking those toys and putting them out there, right? And Joel is just putting things out and making things happen. And it's like, what a brilliant fucking way to do this and make 200,000 people in the early morning Friday be like, I gotta play.
And I think the difference there, right, is like, I think they've scoped that game out in a way that makes sense for what it is, right? Yeah. It's Helldivers 2, it's that team going, all right, what do we want to make and how do we make something that we can support in that way? And like, the support for Helldivers 2 is not like the craziest thing ever. It's not like they're dropping like new, like a big new like Joker character to play with a bunch of skins and a bunch of like a big old battle pass. Like, they have a lot of those things, right? But it is, when I look at Helldivers 2, it doesn't seem unmanageable. It doesn't
manageable
seem like,
is exactly what I was gonna say,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like it doesn't seem like a thing where it is, oh man, we're gonna, it's, this is gonna break our studio trying to keep up with all this and support this, right? Like, Helldivers 2 is a game that is designed for Arrowhead's a studio, right? It's designed for Arrowhead to support at the size that Arrowhead is and at the pace that their fans are going to enjoy, right? I think that's what works about it. And Suicide Squad just feels unattainable. And like, so there's somebody in chat that was like, you know, CEOs like money, and you know, as long as CEOs keep seeing money in like games of service, it's going to continue. My thing is, you know, like, at what point do the CEO stop seeing the money? Because the money is only being made by a few games at the top. Like, you cannot replicate that. You got to replicate something like Helldivers 2.
And so to bring it back to your question in the beginning, right, about AAA studios doing this, big games doing this, like, the jig has got to be up on that. I feel like the only people who are still chasing it to that level are disconnected CEOs like Warner Brothers, right? Mm-hmm. Even, you know, the rumor has been, right, I don't think there's been a statement, right? And we won't until we get the oral history, I'm sure, of Suicide Squad from Jason or somebody else. But like, the decision to make Suicide Squad and make a live service game apparently came from the heads of Rocksteady, right? That's what they wanted the studio to make. And they have since left the company.
Yeah.
Right. And so again, like, you're talking about trying to bet on trends. And the problem is, when the trends emerging in the video game world, in a video game of this size, I feel like it's too late. It's just too late. You just can't do it. Like, you know what I mean? Because by the time you see all these other live services fail and 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 fuck up, you're already on, you're so far down the track. What do? You got to put the game out. You got to do the thing. You got to try to make the money off of it.
We're going to move on to story number two. But before we do, let me tell you about patreon.com/kindoffunny and youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can go and get the Kind of Funny membership, which allows you to get shows ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Shady Rays, an independent sunglasses brand that has over 300,000 five-star reviews. They are on a mission to match affordability with durability, making top quality shades accessible to everyone. They have tons of styles and colors to pick from, so finding the perfect polarized shades is a breeze. If you want an upgrade, we recommend their premium Color Rush lenses. Crafted with rare earth materials, these lenses bring high impact color to life, elevating reds, blues, and greens. Here at Kind of Funny, we all love wearing our Shady Rays, whether it's me looking dope doing my Pokemon Go walks, Snowbike Mike rocking the snow goggles, or Joey just looking fantastic in her tangle-free shades. If your shades go MIA or take a hit, don't sweat it. They've got lost and broken protection, so you're covered from day one. And if you don't love your shades, exchange or return them for free within 30 days. Exclusively for y'all, Shady Rays is giving out their best deal of the season. Head to ShadyRays.com and use code code KF20 for $20 off each pair of polarized sunglasses. Try for yourself the shades rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people. Again, that's ShadyRays.com and use code KF20 for $20 off each pair of polarized sunglasses.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And we're back with story number two. The Witcher 4 Polaris is in full swing as CD Projekt Red devotes bulk of its efforts to development. This is Taylor Lyles at IGN. With the bulk of Cyberpunk 2077 finished, CD Projekt has now shuffled its priorities, putting the bulk of its resources into developing the next mainline. Next mainline, The Witcher game, codenamed Polaris. During an earnings call to discuss the 2023 fiscal year, CD Projekt revealed that it is dedicating a bulk of its efforts. They do say bulk a lot in this article, like, yeah, of its efforts to developing the next installment in its widely popular fantasy themed RPG series. CD Projekt was fully transparent with its investors and those listening in on the call, showing exactly how many developers are being allocated to its current and future projects. A chart reveals that it has over 600 developers at the studios, over 400 of whom are assigned Polaris development. Also interesting to note is that the next installment in the Cyberpunk franchise, codenamed Orion, has 47 developers currently assigned to the project. CD Projekt also revealed that Orion is in the concept stage of its development. The company previously revealed that its new studio, based in Boston, Massachusetts, has been assigned to work on the project. With today's announcement, some quick math shows that about 64% of its staff are working on The Witcher 4 development. That increase in developers is likely due to a big part of the Cyberpunk 2077 team moving over to work on The Witcher 4. Baird, I have, like, at the top of the article, a link to the actual chart that they talk about in the article. And I love how transparent CD Projekt is about it.
Yeah.
Because they have, like, the full chart showing, hey, we have 627 developers at our studio, and then they go project by project. So right now, working on Cyberpunk 2077, you have 17 people working on it at CD Projekt. For Polaris, which is Witcher 4, you have 403 people at the studio working on it. For Orion, which is the next Cyberpunk game, 47. And then for Sirius, you have 37. For Hadar, you have 20.
Hadar.
For shared services, you have 95 people working on it. And then for other projects, you have 8 people. I forget which is which between Sirius and Hadar. I think one of those might be like the remake or something like that, but kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. But fascinating stuff.
Indeed. Again, you know, the transparency is huge and needed. I think CD Projekt Red wants to, they've already earned back so much trust, right? Since the Cyberpunk launch debacle. I think to keep on there, you want to keep being this transparent with your audience, with your friends, with your family, your shareholders, everybody else in the world, right? Mm-hmm. But it also sets expectations. You know, again, we've talked so much, and even now, you know, coming off the heels of talking about in the last story referencing Naughty Dog's failed Last of Us game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then seeing them talk so much about games that are coming up. You know, it goes back to the old one of, why are movie industries announcing games, or why are movies industry announcing movies so early and games play everything so close to the vest, right? Like, CD Projekt Red is trying to be very clear about, like, what is going on. And I think when you're talking about a studio that makes these giant open world expansive RPGs, that goes a long way. Mm-hmm. And it goes the same way, you know, when you look at Bethesda, right, and Todd Howard talking about, like, cool, it's Starfield, then it's Elder Scrolls, then it'll be the next Fallout. Like, that sucks as a Fallout fan, but I appreciate that I'm not sitting there going, well, is it going to be Fallout or Elder Scrolls? Like, should it be blah, 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 blah. Like, hey, this is what's going on. This is what you can expect from us.
And I like this level of transparency, too, especially coming out after Cyberpunk 2077 and us knowing about that game's existence for, what, 8 years?
Yeah,
like,
for a long, long time. Yeah.
Something crazy like
that.
All we
had was the Cyberpunk girl with the arms that were like blades, and we're like, okay.
And, like, for that long, I could have seen CD Projekt going the way of, oh, let's be secretive, like, let's not announce things too early. But I like how they're doing it here, because it is, hey, like, we're treating this as a business, right? Like, we're not going to give you the first trailer for The Witcher 4 8 years before it comes out, but we're going to let you know that we're working on it, right? We're going to let you know that we're working on the next Cyberpunk, and it only has 47 people working on it, and you're probably not going to see it for the next decade, maybe, right? You don't know how long.
Set those expectations.
Yeah. Set those expectations, and then when we get close to it, we'll start marketing, right? We'll start that cycle. But I think this is a smarter way to go about it for, I think, people who ask for more transparency, but then also for, like, people who don't necessarily want to see a million trailers for the same game. You know, I like the idea of, hey, this is what our studio structure is right now. This is what we're working on. We have these projects. We have some other things. I think Remedy has been doing that as well, where it is, hey, we have the next Control game. We have this Condor, something like that we're working on, like the multiplayer Control thing. We have all these things. We're going to tell you about it. But also, we're not giving you teasers. We're just letting you in. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with this.
I mean, the next Witcher sounds exciting. I can't wait.
And to your point of, you know, I think we're back in a place now where people trust CD Projekt. Would you have ever guessed that? Like, coming off of Cyberpunk 2077, where it got to a point that PlayStation took it off the store. Is it surprising now to be at the place where they're talking about the future? And I'm like, oh yeah, I can't wait for the next Witcher and Cyberpunk games.
Surprising, I want to say no. And stick with me, right? Like, The Witcher 3 was such a plant your flag. We are CD Projekt Red. There's the thank you note inside the game case. All the stuff's free except for like the giant expansions, right? Like, they went to such another level where everybody at the time was like, they're doing it right. They're doing it. So when you get to Cyberpunk and things go south and there's all these statements and this and that, and it was like, the hope was that it was someone you liked, someone you trusted that made a mistake, right? We're all humans. Everything, projects get out of control all the time. But we kept saying the proof being the pudding on how they support it, right? And I think, yeah, they've earned back their thing, let alone the fact of earning it back and being honest about it, right? Like, I don't know if he's here today, but Radek often watches our show, right? Mm. And he's in, like, he'll you're wrong us, not about, like, our opinions or when we say he's you're wrong actual facts or this, that, the other. Like, they know they fucked it up back then. And I think they've done the legwork in No Man's Sky way of like, no, hey, we have a vision and we will commit to it and we are committed to our audience and our fans and this, that, the other. Like, okay, it's just gonna be one expansion rather than two. We're changing, you know what I mean? Like, that goes so far to get you back to, okay, great. Where I think even when Witcher 4 launches, the next Cyberpunk launches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I think there'll be the, oh, wait till we play it kind of thing. But I don't think it's gonna be like, as if they were coming right off of Cyberpunk 2077 and it was broken.
I mean, I think you look at Starfield as an example, right? I feel like when we were approaching Starfield, there was an excitement about it. Even that one, I think, had a little bit of, oh, it's Bethesda, so like, is it going to, like, but like, once we got there, I think there was a palpable, oh yeah, we're all excited about this thing, right? Yeah. And then people play it, and then like, they feel how they feel about it. I think for this, the fact that the last thing we're coming off of is Phantom Liberty, and they were able to build that game back up to a place where now there's fans, and you had the Cyberpunk anime as well, too, and like, there is this Cyberpunk community that like rides for that game now. Yeah, I think now that we're going back into the next thing, the next thing being Witcher 4, which is only coming off of Witcher 3 in terms of how people feel about the franchise. I don't even know if we're going to even have that thing of people being like, oh, but it's CD Projekt. Remember the last thing? I think we were going to be like, oh, fuck, yeah, let's go. It's CD Projekt. We're going to see the Witcher 4.
I think what's interesting is bringing Starfield into that conversation, right? Where I think Starfield and Cyberpunk's launches are different stories. Where what I think Starfield's launch is and what Starfield's additionals and changes and updates will be, I don't think you're going to get to the launch of Elder Scrolls or just say the next Bethesda game and have people going, man, I hope they don't fuck it up like they fucked up Starfield, which is how we talk about Cyberpunk.
I'm more so talking about Fallout 76 to Starfield. People were excited for Starfield, despite Fallout 76 being this big fumble.
See, I think what Starfield's legacy will be is what I was trying to, I don't know how successfully or unsuccessfully I did in the lead up to Starfield, but being like, whatever's next is going to be a Bethesda game.
Yeah.
You know what a Bethesda game is, right? Like, Fallout 76 has so many content problems, right? But even at its core, it was a Bethesda game, right? And I feel like people got so caught up in the online multiplayer part, they gave all the sins to that rather than, well, hold on, Bethesda makes this type of game.
See, I think for Bethesda's next game, because it is going to be the next Elder Scrolls game, I almost think that it's like all sins are wiped off the table and we're going to be judging it based on Skyrim, right? Like, I think even for me, as somebody who Starfield didn't vibe with me, but when Elder Scrolls 6 comes around, I'm gonna be like, oh fuck, it's Elder Scrolls 6, right? Like, I know I liked Elder Scrolls 5. I know I liked the last one. I know what this kind of game is. I think that's going to like hold a different weight in the same way that I think Witcher also is going to hold a different weight than even Cyberpunk, even though I think the next Cyberpunk is fine. That's also something I wonder about. I know like the chances of those games coming out in the same year, very probably unlikely, right? But I would love to imagine a time where we get Witcher 4 and Elder Scrolls 6 coming out, let's say around the same time, and where how people's attitudes are going into them. Because I think for both those games, people are going to be like, well, fuck, I like The Last Witcher. I like The Last Elder Scrolls. Like, I'm excited for it. But I'm also, like, I'm very fascinated about the idea of if those two came out in the same year, like, what is going to be the... Which one is going to compete more for people's attention between Elder Scrolls and a Witcher?
Fair enough.
But we'll see one day. Maybe. Maybe not.
Maybe not. Who knows?
More for CD Projekt, story number three.
No. Oh.
CD Projekt says 2023 was the second best year in its history while posting $120 million in net profits. This is Kat Bailey at IGN. CD Projekt Chief Financial Officer Peter Neulubowicz called 2023 the second best year in the company's history as the studio posted net profits of more than $120 million in its full year earnings. Peter credited the release of Phantom Liberty, which he says was purchased by around a quarter of Cyberpunk 2077 owners, as well as ongoing interest in The Witcher for CD Projekt success. Quote, Phantom Liberty success resulted in strong sales, they said in a video statement as part of the earnings. Quote, by the end of 2023, Phantom Liberty had been purchased over 5 million times, end quote. They called Phantom Liberty sales an excellent result, especially given that it's been more than 3 years since the release of the original Cyberpunk 2077. During the earnings, CD Projekt announced that Cyberpunk 2077 has earned about $751 million since its fraught release in 2020. Again, good for CD Projekt. I love hearing that. I'm also always curious about how expansions do in terms of sales.
100%. It sucks that you never get that information, right? Like,
yeah.
I feel like you have to wait for things like this and really the success stories, or it did so badly that somehow that gets out and people reverse engineer. But yeah, it's what I always want to know of, like, again, to bring it to something like Suicide Squad today with Joker, right? Like, Tom, is it a success? And it's the same thing of like throwing Steam numbers around, but like, what's it doing on PlayStation? Like,
yeah.
Where are we at? Oh.
I have, like, in word of mouth I hear from people generally about DLC is that the sales are never that great because you're selling to an audience that's already, like, you can only sell to the audience of people that own that game.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, you're already working with a percentage. And then how many of those people are going to show up to buy the DLC? I feel like that's why you have the growing, like, lack of DLC over the years.
100%. Right. And that's what we've seen time and time again with games is that people don't finish the games they buy, let alone come back to a game 6 months, a year later and do the DLC.
And so,
even for us, like, I think for the majority of the games we love and review, it's super rare for us to get back and do the DLC, right?
So for the fact that they're talking, even going back to last year, Resident Evil 4 had like the big DLC that dropped.
Yeah.
That was getting incredible reviews. I didn't get to go back to it, right? Yeah, it was like very much, oftentimes it feels like a thing that comes and goes, even for big games, right? Horizon Forbidden West had its DLC come out last year.
Yeah.
Burning Shores came out last year.
Which we played
and we really enjoyed as well.
Yeah.
But I think even that felt like it came and went. Spider-Man is another example of a very big game that had a DLC come out, but then it was like, all right, on to the next thing. Or I think a lot of people probably didn't even show up for A City That Never Sleeps during that year.
100%.
And so I think there's something really cool about Cyberpunk being able to have, what they say, around a quarter of Cyberpunk players buying the DLC or buying the expansion.
Yeah.
Super wild. But then also, I think that's going to translate to something like Elden Ring. And I wonder what the lesson is to learn.
It's another one of, even if you didn't play it, you saw the reviews, you saw Idris Elba, you saw people fawning over it. So again, back to helping the reputation of CD Projekt as a whole.
Story number four. Capcom is seeking feedback on potential Dragon's Dogma 2
DLC. We just gave it
to
you. Don't do it. Nobody plays it.
This is Tom Ivan at Video Games Chronicle. Capcom is seeking feedback on Dragon's Dogma 2 DLC following the game's release last week. Notably, the company is using a newly launched survey to gauge interest in additional content for the game. It asks players what kind of DLC they'd like to see released for Dragon's Dogma 2. Players are also asked how much they'd be willing to pay for DLC, with options ranging from up to $10 to over $50. The survey is open until April 21st, and Capcom says participants will receive an original digital wallpaper.
Oh!
While Dragon's Dogma 2 received glowing pre-release reviews, it was criticized upon its release last Friday after players discovered there were 21 separate DLC purchases available on day one. Disappointment appeared to stem largely from the fact that some of the DLCs were things that players felt should be easier to obtain in-game for free.
Oh, shut up.
Earlier this week, Capcom detailed some of his planned updates for Dragon's Dogma 2, which are expected to be released in the near future. Cool. Hopefully the Dragon's Dogma players get what they want.
Yeah.
I imagine that's probably a DLC.
The game's so expansive. There's so much to do.
I mean, Elden Ring's expansive, but sure. I'm about to play this fucking DLC. I'm about to play the fuck out of Erdtree. Capcom, for me, the Dragon's Dogma 2 fan base, from what I see of them, seem like the type of folks that actually would show up for the DLC.
Yeah.
And I think this goes back to our last conversation of what is it about Cyberpunk's expansion and Shadow of the Erdtree that hits harder than I would say something like Burning Shores or something like city that never sleeps, right? Like, is the fact that you're waiting longer? Is it like, is it the size of it? Like, what is it that is making those expansions stand out more than the others?
Sure. A little column A, a little column B, I think, on some of it, right? I would say that for the successful ones there, right, for Cyberpunk, for Erdtree, those, you know, I'm speaking a little out of church since we don't have Erdtree, right? But those feel like 1.5s of the game, right? They don't feel like a full-fledged sequel, obviously, but they feel like as much love and care and interest went into them as the base games. I'm specifically talking about Spider-Man, The City That Never Sleeps, right? Which was enjoyable, but didn't feel like I was I was playing additional content, right? These are like when you get the DVD and you look at the deleted scenes. Like, I understand why this got cut. Like, okay, I understand why I'm not, but this isn't, okay, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Whereas with Horizon, I think then you're dealing with the interest. Burning Shores, I was happy to get into, loved. It motivated me to finish my Platinum, right, and Forbidden West in general. But I don't think Horizon is another game that is so big and so expansive and so few people probably rolled credits, so few people probably platinumed. And I know you're popping off in the chat in a second saying, I did it. Remember, we are not normal. We are not the normal person who buys buys the PlayStation game and goes and plays it. I think it was one of those of like, when you get those kind of games, you can look at the DLC, but then you go, well, there's so much to do here already, right? Yeah. It's like, I think for me, the analog is Dead Island 2, right? When we were leading up to the Portal, I was so excited for to go back and platinum Dead Island 2. And I've tinkered with it, but obviously I'm using the Portal every night for things I'm reviewing or Helldivers or whatever. But when they like, here's the house DLC, and here's this new deal, they announced a new DLC this week, I think. It was just one of those things of just like, that's rad. I still have so much to do for my Platinum that I'm not even paying attention to what this is. I don't care. Look at Dying Light 2.
Yeah, I was going
to
bring that up.
They still keep bringing shit out, and it's like, that is great for you and your community, but like, I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, and I was looking at chat, right, and some people were wondering about my examples too, and I'm like, I would extend that to any other DLC. Like, the reason I do Horizon and Spider-Man is just because, like, I view those as big games, right? I view those as comparable in terms of, like, popularity to something like Cyberpunk or something like Elden Ring. But yeah, like, you go down the list and it is, yeah, something like Dying Light, where I like Dying Light. I didn't show it to any of the Dying Light DLC, and I would love to talk to anybody that did, right? Yeah, I know they're out there. I know there are Dying Light fans out there. Like, there must be. They're not making these things for nobody. But yeah, like, I think the amount of excitement, the amount of hype, the amount of, like, anticipation for something like Phantom Liberty and something like Shadow of the Erdtree just feels palpably different than, yeah, something like Horizon Burning Shores.
You know, not having played, well, no, I guess having played everything but Erdtree, right? Erdtree and Phantom Liberty, I put in the same vein as Spider-Man Miles Morales.
Okay.
It's more of the same world, but clearly they've gone and put so much love and care and done, you know what I mean? Like, that it feels like it is a standalone thing. Miles was standalone, right? But I mean, that's the feeling of, like, it's that big of a deal. Whereas Burning Shores felt like more. Yeah, we went to LA. Yeah, they introduced Seika, but it was like,
yeah.
Okay. You know what I mean? I'm still doing the same shit.
Honestly, I mean, I might disagree with you a little bit on Burning Shores, but I hear where you're coming from in terms of what a lot of DLC is. Because I think the example that comes to mind too is the Breath of the Wild DLC, where Tears of the Kingdom came out last year.
Yeah.
And so many people were talking about, are we going to get DLC? Are we going to get DLC? And then finally we heard that we're not going to get DLC. And the whole time that's happening, I'm like, do we even want DLC? Like, for the people that played the Breath of the Wild DLC, it's like, cool, that was more of that game. But to your point with Tears of the Kingdom, I played 100 hours of Tears of the Kingdom, and I still have so much more that I could do in that game. And a lot of the Breath of the Wild DLC was just more, right? Here's another, like, dungeon to explore.
Here's a motorbike.
Like, here's a few things here and there. And for me, it's like, I think something like what I think Shadow of the Erdtree is going to be, obviously, because we've not played it, but this is me judging off of previous From Software expansions. I expect that to be, hey, here is a fucking big new area with big new story and new, and, like, you're going to get 10 hours, 20 hours, I have no idea, but you're going to get, like, a sizable chunk out of this that's going to feel almost like a separate game. Same for Phantom Liberty, where Phantom Liberty, in my opinion, almost feels like a separate game. I would say that he's, like, in terms of content, almost feels more comparable to a Horizon Burning Shores, but I think Phantom Liberty just hit harder. I think maybe it is, hey, we got Idris Elba for this thing, right? Like, we got brand new characters that you're going to fall in love with for this thing, right? We got a big new area, which, again, Burning Shores did, but I don't know. There's something about that hit harder for me, that, like, really resonated with me. Maybe it's just the quality of what they put into it versus what you get out of a Burning Shores. And maybe it is the time you spent waiting for it, because, what, it's 2023 versus 2020 when that game originally came out, whereas Burning Shores, or Horizon to Burning Shores, is only a year. I think there was some different his pomp and circumstance to it by the time we actually got around to it that I think really worked for
me. Does it fall into the fact, too, that I think, you know, your V is more interesting than Aloy? Like, you know, and like, what are you playing these games for? Like, again, I would say for Horizon, when I'm playing Horizon, it is about climbing up the wall, fighting the machine, finding the thing, doing the stuff, blah, 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 blah. It's sandy, it's sunny, whatever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And then for Phantom Liberty, it was like, hey, do you want to take your V on a Mission Impossible mission and do all these different things and meet these different characters and talk to the president and crash Air or Space Force One? And it's like, that felt like a movie, right? And Horizon's DLC felt like more Horizon. Mm. It felt like more quests. Mm.
Moving on to story number 5. Embracer CEO says it's too early to start buying studios again.
Shut the fuck up.
This is just Andy Robinson.
We should, as an industry, just ban you from buying any studios. Listen, look at Barrett's punching over there.
He said it's too early. He never said never.
The power away.
Is this what the email was at the beginning of the show, Greg, about like we need to rise up against and fight somebody?
Everybody,
CEO
we're gonna buy Embracer just to close it.
The article reads, Embracer CEO Lars Wingfors has told investors he believes it's, quote, too early for the group to start considering studio acquisitions again following the completion of its costly restructuring. On Friday, the company confirmed the sale of Borderlands developer Gearbox to Take-Two in a deal worth $460 million. The deal marked the end of a 9-month money-saving operation, which saw the sale or closure of many studios, the cancellation of nearly 30 games, and more than 1,300 job cuts. Surprisingly, on the day the restructuring was completed, CEO Wingfors was asked in an investor call whether Embracer was ready to start acquiring studios again. To which he replied,
"These are the kind of motherfuckers. This is what we're talking about. Not even Lars, the investors, right?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. We closed these things. We fucked up a whole bunch of people's lives. All these layoffs. Yeah. Are we ready to buy
are
more?
Are we buying more?
Like, when we bought more before the thing that almost sunk everybody." Our stock was up. Can we get back to
that? Yeah, it's like, can we get bigger? Like, why aren't we getting bigger? Let's see, getting smaller.
Infinite big.
To which he replied,
that's the people in charge of these big companies.
Nobody fucking cares.
He replied, it was too early to say. Quote, looking to do more mergers and acquisition deals, I think it's way too early to start talking about restarting the M&A engines again, he said via RPS. Quote, now we are in the late phases of the consideration into the future of the group, and that's our highest focus and priority. How we set up ourselves and structure ourselves and utilize our assets we have within the group and have them work together to exploit Lord of the Rings. He didn't say that part, but I'm adding it because he thinks it. And how we leverage them better working together, utilizing different functions. Quote, I think that's our focus right now, to increase profitability and cash flow generation by simply making better products and games, end quote. I don't believe he believes that last part. Make better products and games?
It's hard to say. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I want to dunk on Embracer all day long, and I'll make fun of them on the stage and yada, yada, yada. I think is an interesting comparison to our CD Projekt Red talk about, like being at the Cyberpunk launch and being like, yo, will they ever get the goodwill back? Like, I do want to believe in the good of people. Lars, you know, I mean, had a very bold business strategy that has blown up in his face and the company's face and yada, yada, yada. But to sit there and be like, I think that's a lie, I don't know.
For
again,
sure.
I definitely want to be like, we should buy all the dead THQ games and call ourselves THQ.
The reason I have that reaction is, yeah, when you talk about simply making better products and games, I look at Embracer up until now, and I do not associate
what
them.
What good game have you made?
Yeah, I'm like, I don't associate them 100%. With good products and good games.
100%.
And I go back to the statements made last year, right after the whole Saudi deal falling through, and them talking about, we got to exploit Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
That doesn't strike me as like in the same heart of, oh, but we want to make quality Lord of the Rings products, especially after putting out Gollum, which I know Gollum started not under them, then ended up being under them. But yeah, like, I don't know. I don't buy it. I got to see it.
Exactly.
If I see a good game, that's a totally reasonable thing.
I just don't want to be like,
I don't want to put words in his mouth.
I don't know this man.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And I think his company's really fucked this place up. But like, I don't want to be like, you're a fucking liar. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I feel that. I feel that. But yeah, cool. We're not getting.
But fucking Bracer. I mean, still, you know what I mean?
At least we're not getting any more acquisitions soon.
Again, like, and I did think it was actually kind of cool when he's like, the M&A engines. I'm like, all right, that's a cool way to say it. Yeah, like.
But also fucked up when you think about it.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. We just had a machine.
We just have to fucking eat.
We had a machine that was merging and acquisitioning and acquiring things.
This is back to the thing of like, you know, did you ever think, I can't fathom a world where the Embracer Group is still standing in 5 years and is good.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? That's an interesting. I want to know what the fuck that narrative and timeline is going to look
insane.
Like.
Yeah, like I talked about this before, right? Of the way I look at EA, even though I know recently EA had I forget if it was a statement or maybe it was the layoffs, right? That was like, oh shit, all right, we're getting back to the old EA, right? But like yeah, up until yeah. now, the fact that EA has been, hey, we're doing EA Originals, hey, we're publishing games like It Takes Two and A Way Out and Fae and Unravel. Hey, we have the Jedi game. Hey, we have Apex Legends and people like that for a moment. And like, you know, there was a level of quality that EA went from not having, or like a level of quality and identity. Cause it was EA's just sports games about 10 years ago or so. And now when I think of EA, I am like, nah, man, I got some EA games I'm excited about. Yay! I kind of like where EA's at. Whereas Embracer feels like a place or feels like a studio or publisher, I guess, company.
It's a people
where I'm like, I can't see that turnaround for Embracer. You know, I don't know what that looks like. It'd be very fascinating to think about, right?
100%.
You know, if they somehow put out a 9 out of 10 Lord of the Rings game, if Tomb Raider comes out and does great for them, and now Crystal Dynamics is like their star player, if they're able to foster these publishers and studios that are under them and like turn them all into stars 10 years from now, if we're talking about Embracer the way we talk about, I don't know, the way we talk about Bandai Namco or like Capcom or something, oh man, that'd be a wild feature. But it's so I cannot think about what that would be like.
100%.
Greg, we just talked about a lot of big news, but if I wanted something smaller, say the tiniest news I need to know about, where would I go?
You go to our last story, the We News channel, where we cover all the small news you need to know about.
Now it's time. Story number 6. We got Wii News. Let's start off with the Stellar Blade demo. It is up currently on PSN, so go hop on that.
Hear Blessing talk about it on PS I Love You XOXO. Hear me and Andy talk about it on Gamescast.
YouTube.com/kindoffunnygames. This next one's from Noble. Dragon's Dogma 2 update is out on PS5 and PC. You can switch ray tracing on and off in the options. You have the option to set FPS at max 30 FPS in options, changing the number of art of metamorphosis to 99. You have the option to switch motion blur on and off in the options. You have some bug fixes and more. I could have sworn I heard squeaking coming from that direction.
There's somebody over there.
Oh, I thought it was a mouse.
Something's going on over
I was
there.
Like, do we have rats? Tekken 8's Eddie Gordo officially releases on April 4th. This next one's from VGC. Minecraft is reportedly getting a native PS5 version.
Wow.
Certain Affinity is laying off 25 people. And then Pandemonium comes to Asgard's Wrath 2. It's the fourth cosmic event, free for all players. And that's it for Wii News. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. We write in and let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong so we can correct it for those watching later on YouTube and listening later on podcast services around the globe. This is from Radic. Radic says, Bless.
Hi, Radic.
When you reviewed the CDPR chart with 627 developers assigned to various projects, you mentioned that one of the projects besides Polaris, which is the next Witcher, and Orion, which is the next Cyberpunk, is probably the Witcher remake. It's important to note that the remake project is being developed by Fool's Theory, an external team who recently released a story-driven RPG called The Thaumaturge. Their headcount does not contribute to the aforementioned number. Other projects included in the chart besides Polaris and Orion are Sirius, which is a brand new game set in the Witcher universe, developed by Molasses Flood, and Hadar, which is a new original IP from CD Projekt Red. Thank you, Radic. That's very good. You're wrong. Greg?
He's like, by the way, you guys are fucking liars about us.
We're shutting down. We'll never have you back for a panel ever again. That brings us to the end of Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday, we run you through the nerdy news you need to know about live on YouTube, Twitch, and on podcast services around the globe. If you love what we do, support us with the Kinda Funny membership on Patreon or YouTube to get all of our shows ad-free, watch us record them live, and get a daily exclusive show right after this. It's Kinda Funny Game Showdown featuring Alana Pierce, Ben Starr, aka Clive from Final Fantasy 16, and Abu Salim, aka the founder of Sturgeon Studios, who's making Tales of Kinzera Zao.
You nailed it.
Yeah, I had to think about it for a second.
I saw for a second, I saw your wheel go. I'm like, do I have the game name? And I was ready to help you, but
I appreciate it. Go check that out. Happening now on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Until next time, it's been my pleasure to serve you.